When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Raider Nation? Matt Holder here from Silver and Black Pride to bring you another Behind Enemy Lines podcast. I've got my friend Patty Carroll over here from Windy City Gridiron, SB Nation site that covers the Chicago Bears. Patty, thanks for coming on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Appreciate you. Well, real quick before we get into it, you know, we're all NFL fans here. So why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find you over on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is at Opinion Bear. I thought that was funny. I didn't use my real name, but I'm Windy City Gridiron. I write under my own name, Patty Curl. I do the five questions and I do the post game write up. So if you want to hear Bears fan opinion after the game, you can catch it over there.
Awesome. Yeah, make sure to follow Patty. So Patty, I always like to start these things out, you know, just kind of asking about the team as a whole, and you know, with a 2-2 start to the first month of the season, how are you feeling about the Bears moving forward? And have your expectations changed since the preseason / week one?
Yeah, they haven't changed a lot. I think most people looking at our schedule thought we would be 2-2 at this time and probably with the same two wins. At this point, the Bears are kind of in a, I wouldn't say we're fully rebuilding, but we're really thinking about the future and the future with Justin Fields. I don't think a lot of Bears fans are super invested in this season or the particular outcomes. Obviously, we want to win. We don't have our first round draft pick, so there's no advantage to losing if you'd like to play that tank game. But we're about where we expected to be in terms of wins and losses. The path has been a bit of a rocky one. Maybe not quite as I'd say the defense has been a little better than I expected, and the offense has been a little worse than I expected. So.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, you took the wind out of my sail a little bit there. I was going to ask, you know, are you guys still hopeful for the playoff berth, or is that so? But it sounds like you guys are more towards building towards the future. And if
I mean, I wouldn't be mad if we made the playoffs. And you know, the way the defense is playing, and with Justin Fields, I feel like you know you have a chance. He's very talented. He's got the potential for explosive plays. So. I'd be more excited if we made the playoffs this year than last year when it felt like we backed in and we were just ready to lose on wild card weekend, which you know, we did.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know where you're coming from. But I mean, you bring up Justin Fields, so I feel like we have to kind of start out by addressing the old elephant in the room. Is Justin, what's going on with the quarterback situation? Is Justin Fields really not ready, or is this some sort of like mind trick kind of stuff going on, or some weird coach gimmick from Magic Nagy? What are you thinking?
I honestly don't know. I follow the team closely, and Matt Nagy is playing mind games on all of us, and I think including himself. If I were to give my best interpretation, and this is you know, one person's opinion, but I think that Justin Fields is not ready to run the offense Matt Nagy wants to run, which is what he tried to bring from the Chiefs. It's a West Coast offense, and it is also relies on a lot of timing and anticipation, which Fields is not really developed. He didn't need to so much in college. I think he could definitely, you know, he has the potential to do that. But right now, Andy Dalton is better equipped to do that. If you want to win football games, I think Justin Fields is your best option. So Matt Nagy seems like maybe his priority is trying to finally make his offense work. But most Bears fans want to see Justin Fields on the football field and go with the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if Justin Fields gives you the better chance to win football games, that's the ultimate goal, right? Yeah. So I'm exactly. Curious, you know, I think with Fields is with his first two starts, it's kind of been polar opposites of one another. So I'm curious of what your first impressions of him, you know, having seen him play two starts, and what do you think the biggest difference between those two starts were?
Yeah, so my first impression was actually he came in at the half on the Bengals game. And that was a good first impression. It was similar to what I expected. He had a couple explosive plays. He made a couple mistakes. He showed off his athleticism. He's crazy fast. And that's not even his best trait is his downfield accuracy, which the Bears have not had since Jay Cutler. So that was really exciting to see. We saw it in the Bengals game. in the Browns game, we didn't see anything except disaster. And, you know, I think the most people say the difference starts with the play calling. He was – Matt Nagy basically called the game he was planning to call for Andy Dalton and didn't give any extra protection. Our offensive line was completely outmatched by the Browns defensive line, and they didn't make any adjustments. They didn't – they, you know, put in more than five man protection, I think, 30% of the time, which is – you know, it's maybe league average. Gotcha. It was way lower than they needed for that game. And they didn't do much play action. They didn't do many rollouts. They didn't give any, you know, easy options for him. And the results were terrible. He took 9 sacks, which is, I'm sure, is some kind of record. In the second game, he took 1 sack. So you just, I mean, the biggest difference was pressure. And you can tease out what changed between those games. One, you know, from one part, it's the defense we were up against. Miles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney are certainly much more intimidating than, was it Romeo Okwara? And then I don't even know who the Lions' second best pass rusher is, but
Julian Okwara.
Possibly, yeah, the Okwara brothers.
So awesome. So this kind of leads into my next question. Is, I guess the biggest difference between the two game plans is it seems like with Andy Dalton in the game, there may be a maybe less, more 5-man protections and trying to get the ball out quicker. But with Fields, it's a little bit more max protection and maybe more downfield shots. Is that kind of what I'm gathering from what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely with Fields. I mean, he has better downfield accuracy, has a stronger arm. And honestly, I think the difference between the two things, the two games, is that Matt Nagy stopped calling plays. Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator, who awesome. Has been, you know, part of the game plan, but not calling plays at the beginning of the season. And I think Matt Nagy is just more stubborn in doing what he wants to do. And Bill Lazor is more willing to adjust the game plan to his personnel, you know, make some compromises to try to make something that works, as opposed to, you know, his vision of how things should go. And that obviously worked better.
Awesome. So I'm curious, and I think you kind of already answered this, but right now, in your opinion, is who makes the Bears offense better? Is it Dalton or is it Fields? And I think I have my answer based on what you've been telling me so far.
Yeah, I kind of gave that away. I think, you know, the best combination is Fields with Bill Lazor calling the plays. It's possible that Nagy wants Dalton with Nagy calling the plays, which actually, you know, that worked pretty well for the quarter or the game and a half that we saw it for. But it's just, it's not as exciting as Fields. It's one dimensional, and nobody wants to watch Andy Dalton when you have a franchise quarterback that you draft in the first round.
Yeah. It's like driving a Toyota Camry when you got a Ferrari in the parking lot, right?
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, I want to move on to a wide receiver that I've always been a big fan of, and that's Allen Robinson. From a Bears fan perspective, I'm curious how frustrating it's been, or if it's even been frustrating, to see him be so good and still be productive, but also feel like he's being held back by bad quarterback play. Because I feel like he has the potential to be a top receiver in the league, but he isn't in that conversation because of who's been throwing him the ball.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, even before the Bears, he's had a historically bad list of quarterbacks. He had, you know, Christian Hackenberg in college, and then he had Blake Bortles. Like, literally, you know, those quarterbacks are consistently the butts of jokes. And he gets to Chicago, and, you know, Mitch Trubisky didn't really do him any favors. You know, I the Bears have been holding him back, but as a Bears fan, you know, you kind of want to believe that, you know, he's in a good place because you want him to stay. So it's... Yeah, there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance there. But, yeah, it's frustrating not to see him reach his potential. And this season has been a little frustrating, too. He's just off to a slow start. And I think, you know, a lot of that is just the game planning. I think a lot of teams see him as the biggest threat in the Bears' offense, which, you know, this season, actually, because he's been pretty well contained, Darnell Mooney and David Montgomery have both been really – stepping up as the biggest threat so far. But I think Robinson has the potential. And, you know, especially as Fields comes on, he gets, you know, honestly, Andy Dalton is the best quarterback Allen Robinson has had in his career. And if Justin Fields, you know, gets comfortable, I think he's going to be the best quarterback and the best reason for Robinson to stay if he's willing to at the end of the season.
Well, awesome. So can you give Raider fans a little bit of insight on what makes Allen Robinson so good and kind of what to expect from him on Sunday?
Yeah, so he's like he's kind of average in a lot of ways. He's 6'2", so he's pretty tall. He's not super fast, but he has adequate speed. But he's just a great technician. He's a great route runner. He's got a great release. He gets off press easily, and he's got great hands. You know, he can use leverage. He can make contested catches, high point the ball. So he's just really good at everything. He's obviously a student of the game and seems to, you know, just try to improve his game every year. And generally he does. So
awesome. So on the other side of the coin, Darnell Mooney is a guy that I've heard of, but don't know a whole lot about since he was a fifth round pick last year and didn't seem like he really caught people's attention outside of Chicago until about midway point of the season. So can you shine a little bit of light on what Mooney brings to the table?
Yeah, Mooney's faster. He was a fifth round pick last year from Tulane, so smaller school. I think he was a little bit lower on other people's draft radar. The one thing I'll say for Ryan Pace, our current GM, is that he's found a lot of gems in the late rounds, and Mooney's the latest example of that. He's definitely fast. I don't remember his clock time. I think it was maybe 4.4 speed, but he plays at least that fast, and he's quick in and out of breaks, and he's a little smaller, but he's great at getting separation, and you know, he's just improved from I would say like 3 weeks into last season he was the Bears' second receiver. No one was expecting that, and so far this season he's the leading receiver. And you know, compared to Robinson, he's a little quicker, he's a little faster. He's not going to be as good with contested catches, but he's good at getting separation. So,
gotcha. So with Mooney, Marquise Goodwin, Demir Byrd, and Breshad Perriman, who has the fifth receiver, who I know hasn't even played at all. I mean, that's one hell of a 100-meter team, relay team, or whatever, 4x100. So that's obviously a lot of speed on the outside for the Bears. Is a big part of the offensive philosophy for Chicago to get chunk plays with their wide receivers on the outside?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a goal for them. And you see that in the roster that they've made up. You know, it's interesting because historically we haven't been good at that at all. And part of it is our quarterbacks. An interesting set. Justin Fields right now has six. So far this season has six. The downfield passing with more than, it was either 20 or 25 air yards when I heard this stat. All last season, Mitch Trubisky had seven. I think Andy Dalton has one all season. So they you know,
gotcha.
Knowing they have Justin Fields, it makes a lot of sense. Before that, it was questionable how well they would be able to use that. I think you're going to have maybe, you know, I'm sure you'll ask later about the offensive line, but that's also been a limitation in our deep passing game.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely going to touch on the line. But before we get there, we'll go a little bit closer to the offensive line and talk about the tight ends for a second. And I saw Jimmy Graham has two targets on the entire year. So what's going on there? Is he just not getting thrown at, or is Cole Kmet just kind of taking over as TE1?
So it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's hard to say Cole Kmet has really taken over because he hasn't played well. the Jimmy Graham situation is very frustrating for Bears fans because he's getting $8 million this year. And we cut one of our best players, Kyle Fuller, due to cap issues. We cut a very reliable left tackle, Charles Leno, who was making maybe $9 million. Also due to cap issues, and now we have problems at corner and tackle, and Jimmy Graham is playing five snaps a game. Yeah. So
yikes.
It's not a logical situation, so it's hard to say exactly why it's happening. I think Graham still has value as a red zone target. He still knows how to, you know, box people out and win with leverage and his height. He doesn't have any burst anymore. He's not a great blocker. So he's not playing as many snaps, and they're trying to make Cole Kmet a thing. And, you know, he's a second year tight end. It takes a while to develop. Hopefully that'll happen, but he's played pretty bad this season, and Bears friends are, you know, we like to be frustrated. We're annoyed with that. So.
Gotcha. I can hear you as a Raider fan who didn't agree with all the offseason transactions. I can definitely hear where you're coming from. Feel your pain a little bit, but I do have to follow up and ask, why do the Bears have five tight ends at the roster if they only throw at two of them?
That's a great question. Part of it is
I asked the million-dollar question.
JP Holtz, I guess maybe he's the fourth or fifth tight end. He's really a fullback. He's a gotcha. Special teamer. That roster spot could have been taken by a running back just as well. So, and then Jesper Horsted, he's been actually inactive most of the games. He's a pretty talented athletic tight end. He had an amazing preseason game where he got like three touchdowns, and I think that's when he earned his roster spot. But they're not giving him a chance, honestly. I'd like to see what he can do because Cole Kmet's doing nothing.
Gotcha. Oh, I hear you.
And then Jesse James, he's a good user of roster spot. He's a good blocker. He's a reliable catcher.
Gotcha. So we talked about it a little bit, but with the Bears offensive line a couple of weeks ago, Justin Fields got sacked 9 times. Was that all on the offensive line, or can you give a little insight onto who they have up front?
Yeah, I don't think an offensive line on its own can get 9 sacks. It really takes a collaboration of inadequacy to make that happen.
Yeah, that's
true. But our line is not good. Part of it is injuries. The Bears drafted a second round tackle that we were really excited about, Tevin Jenkins, who's on our IR right now with a back surgery. Hopefully they're optimistic that he's going to come back as good as ever. We'll see about that. And so they picked up Jason Peters. He was, retired and fishing at
right.
the time. I can't make credit for the joke, but my colleague EJ said they literally plucked him out of the river. I think is a good way to put it. And he's,
gotcha.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's very
right.
technically sound, but he's old. He wasn't expecting to play. So, he's in decent shape, but probably not as good if he had a full off season. And on the other end, they have Jermaine Ifedi, who he makes a lot of mistakes. He'll have stretches where he plays well. And he'll have stretches where you understand why the Seahawks, who have one of the worst offensive lines in the league, cut it. So.
Gotcha.
And then the middle of our line is supposed to be a strength. Cody Whitehair and James Daniels are both second round picks who have played well at times and have not played well this season up until last week, which, hopefully this means they're getting better. It might just mean they were playing the Lions. We'll get a little more information on Sunday about that. And then the middle of their line, center Sam Mustipher was an undrafted free agent, and the Bears just had a little too much faith in him. He played okay coming in relief at the end of last season, but he's not a starter. He's a nice depth piece. And
gotcha. Well, I tell you what, the two guys that I'm kind of most curious about are the two tackles you brought up, Jermaine Ifedi and then Jason Peters. Both those guys are fairly recognizable names, but I mean, the Raiders, they've had some two pretty good young edge rushers in Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue, both of whom have really quick first steps and really great good offs. So I'm curious, are Ifedi and Jason Peters, are those two guys going to be the ones for sure holding down the edge? And, how quick are they kind of moving off the ball? Especially, I know Ifedi's kind of been more known for his run blocking a little bit. I think he's played some guard. And then Peters, like you mentioned, they just plucked him out of the river, as your friend had to say.
Yeah.
And obviously it's getting up there in age. So how is their first step looking?
Yeah, that honestly, speed is a problem, definitely for Peters. I mean, he just got destroyed by Myles Garrett, who's he's got burst, he's got strength. That none of it was good for Peters. I think Ifedi actually probably is a little better with his first step, but he's going to make mistakes. You'll be able to get around the Bears' tackles, but hopefully, we'll have some accommodations for that more so than we did in the Browns game.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, I know that's not great for you, but I do like to hear that. It's good news to me. Good news to me, and hopefully a lot of people that listen. So, but what about the run blocking for the line as a whole? We just saw the Raiders get beat up on the ground on Monday night by the Chargers. So do you think that's a matchup that might tilt in the Bears' favor a little bit?
Yeah, I think, it's hard to say. Our run blocking is better than our pass blocking, but I just, told you how bad our pass blocking is. So, but we definitely moved the ball well on the ground against the Lions. And a lot of that was the offensive line. David Montgomery had a great season. He's injured now. But I still think that the offensive line is going to be able to move people, and we'll be able to get some work done on the ground.
Gotcha. So you bring up David Montgomery's injuries and whatnot. So I'm curious, obviously the news coming out earlier today or earlier Tuesday, about him being out, I think it's 5 to 6 weeks, something like that, 4 to 6, maybe something in that range. So how do you think the Bears are going to approach this position group, or the running back position specifically? And do they have a feature back or a potential feature back, or do you think it'll be more of a committee approach?
Yeah, I think that Damian Williams is going to more or less take over the feature back role. There'll probably be a little bit more rotation with Khalil Herbert, they have a sixth round pick who they like a lot. He's fast. I haven't seen a lot of him, but the people I know who follow the draft were excited about him.
Yeah.
But Damian Williams is a good all around back. He came from the Chiefs. He was one of the best players in their Super Bowl victory. I'm forgetting which number that is. Whenever I come up with a Super Bowl number, I have to go back to Super Bowl 20, which was 1986 when the Bears won, and then, you know, count from there. But
yeah,
he's definitely a good all around back. He's not as good at breaking tackles as David Montgomery, but a few backs in the league are. So I think he's going to get the majority of the load.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Damian Williams, I can't remember if it was in the Super Bowl or along the playoff run. He had like a long, like probably like 75, 80 yard run, I think, for a touchdown around the left end or something like that. And I mean, I remember him from obviously because he played for the Chiefs. So somewhat close to home. I remember there was a play where he and Tyreek Hill were pretty much like competing to be speed for speed down the field and whatnot. So definitely.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, I didn't see that, but he's definitely faster than Montgomery. But he's not as hard to take down.
Gotcha. Well, let's transition to the other side of the ball, which is something I'm sure you're a little bit more excited about. And let's start with the defensive line. So who's that number 52 guy? He looks like a pretty good player.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Not bad, right?
Yeah, he might look good in silver and black now that I think about it.
Maybe at one point.
Yeah, Khalil Mack is, you know, he's been amazing for the Bears. Our first game, we had him. He came up with a strip sack on Aaron Donald and a couple other amazing plays. I think he had a pick six. It hasn't been quite that much of a box score revelation, but he's been, you know, as long as he's been healthy, he's been the best player on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I always appreciate about Khalil Mack. And I mean, I'll be honest, I still love Khalil Mack. I still love watching his Bear highlights. He seems like a good guy. I still have my Raiders Khalil Mack jersey and hope that someday maybe he'll have like a little swan song at the end of his career and come back and I can dust that thing off.
He's going to retire, Bear.
We'll see. Hey, they apparently picked up the phone this offseason, so who knows? Let's see.
Yeah, and we hung up the phone.
yeah, this is true. But in all seriousness, I am a little curious about Mack's age. He's on the other side of 30, will be 31 in February. So as someone who watches him week in and week out, is he slowing at all, or is he still that same dominant player that he was in Oakland and has been in Chicago for the last few years?
I'd say when he's fully healthy, he's as dominant as he's ever been. I think he probably has more nagging injuries than he did when he was younger. Right now, he's got a little bit of a foot issue, and he's still, you know, has played well. He's getting sacks. He's getting pressure. He's getting double teamed, unfortunately. I think probably the main way the age is taking a toll is that he's having injuries linger a little bit longer, probably come up a little more often.
Gotcha. So speaking of both edge rushers, it looks like Robert Quinn is having a pretty good year so far with 15 pressures, 4.5 sacks. So can you tell me about how other teams have tried to block and contain both Quinn and Mack? And is Quinn thriving because Mack gets so much attention, or is he getting a lot more one-on-one blocks? Like, I'm curious how teams have defended the Bears with those.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so. Last year, Robert Quinn was a complete bust. I think he was injured all year, but basically, you know, he had a strip sack on his first game, and then I think he had 1.5 sacks all season. He was a non-factor. So I don't think teams have been really putting a lot of thought into game planning for Robert Quinn. And he came back fully healthy this year, and he's playing like we expected him to when we signed him to a big money contract. So that's been great. I think Mack is getting the attention. I don't think teams have made big adjustments for Quinn yet, but they might start having to, because right now he's our sack leader and he's continuing to play well. And Bears fans continue to be surprised, but at some point I think he might get used to it, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you bring it up. It's like, well, you might have to pay more attention to him. But it's one of those things where I feel like if it's easier said than done, because as soon as you start paying more attention to him, the guy on the other side's coming around. So
yeah, honestly, I prefer you double-team Quinn and then Mack at the sacks, because I've got more emotionally invested in him. It's more satisfying for me to watch him get a sack.
Especially this week, right, too? I mean, you got to feel like
– Yeah, you got to, you know, everyone can cheer when Mack gets a sack this week. So
yeah, well – we'll see. So there's some little hostility in Raider Nation, but for the most part, I think he's still
heard that.
The next guy we have to talk about is going to be Akeem Hicks. And when the Raiders played the Bears a couple of years ago out in London, he left the game early with an injury. And I thought that was a key part in how the Raiders were able to have offensive success and end up winning. Hicks went down last week with a groin injury. So I'm curious if you have any insight on the severity of the injury and if he'll be playing this week. And if he can't go, you know, who's kind of going to be that replacement for him?
Yeah, you know, the Bears like to be, you know, I think all teams do during the season. They'd like to give as little information as possible about their injuries. I'm concerned that he's not going to play. And he is a big difference maker. And he's, you know, not just in his play, but he is a real leader on that defense. I think his energy helps fuel other people. But the Bears have a lot of depth on offensive line, or sorry, defensive line. I wish they had a lot of depth on offensive line. And so Bilal Nichols is he'll be on the field whether or not a Hicks is. I think he's a third or fourth year, fifth round pick. That was another one of Pace's finds that he's really developed well. He'll definitely be a difference maker. We just picked up somebody, Angelo Blackson. I think he was Cardinal, maybe. Don't quote me on that. Well, it's on tape, so I guess I am quoted on that, but I might be wrong. And he's been playing better than expected. He's a big lineman, and he's been getting pressure, getting into the backfield. And then Eddie Goldman, our nose tackle, is going to, you know, he plugs up holes and he gets sacked sometimes. We haven't seen him much lately. He opted out last season and had his first game this season on Sunday. So, but if he's at 100%, he'll definitely help make up for that.
Yeah. I mean, the Bears defensive line has been something the last few years that, you know, as a former defensive lineman and as someone who, like I said, loves Khalil Mack and whatnot, you know, it's just been something I've been jealous of. I mean, it's pro bowlers, all pros all across the board. So, I mean, it's definitely something I think a weak Raiders offensive line might be in a little bit of trouble for us. So I think we'll see a lot of max protection this week. But so for the linebackers, Roquan Smith was the guy that I really liked coming out of Georgia a few years ago. And it looks like he's kind of the main guy in the middle for the Bears. Can you talk about what Chicago's defense will ask him to do and what his sort of strengths and weaknesses are?
Yeah, I love Roquan. I was a big fan coming out. I wanted him to draft Vita Vea that year just because I love large football players, but
Roquan was one of my
top realistic suggestion. And he's, you know, he started out a little bit slow, but he's really picked it up. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level. You know, Bears fans will say for a couple years now, definitely so far this year. He's maybe his most impressive thing is he's one of the best coverage linebackers in the league, which is obviously more and more important as the league gets more and more passing focus. He's very quick. He's very smart. He can blitz well. Sometimes he has a little, he's not the biggest linebacker. Sometimes he'll have a little bit of trouble, you know, shedding a block, but he'll usually just get around you. And he's becoming sort of the leader and the center of this defense.
Gotcha. So other than Smith, is there really another linebacker for Chicago that you think Raider fans should know about? Because again, when I was doing research for this, it kind of seemed like the Bears are kind of going with that new philosophy of, you know, playing as few linebackers as possible. So I'm curious if there's anyone else.
I don't know if that has to do with their roster or their strategy, but you know, a couple of years ago, actually, the Bears were trying to decide which linebackers to keep. They had a lot of great depth, and a lot of us wanted them to keep this guy named Nick Kwiatkowski, which you may have heard of him.
Once or twice.
But we decided to keep Danny Trevathan instead, who's an older veteran. He's a great player, but he's been injured a lot since he's currently on IR.
Gotcha. So
in his spot right now is Alec Ogletree, who we picked up off the scrap heap in the preseason. He's kind of a boomer bust guy who has enough bad play that I think no one wanted him, but he can make big plays, and he's actually played pretty well for the Bears so far. So, you know, don't be shocked if he gets a sack or gets an interception or something, but also don't be shocked if he, you know, lets Darren Waller, you know, run past him for a touchdown.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Nick Kwiatkowski's struggling to see the field for the Raiders this year anyway, so I don't know how much time he would be.
That does make me feel better.
Yeah, I don't know how much time he'd be getting with the Bears. Maybe a little bit more with the injuries, but yeah, his spots, he's been banged up for the majority of the preseason. Been on and off the injury report all seasons long, and his spot's been taken by Denzel Perryman. So, don't know if how much the Bears are really missing there, but. All right, well, let's move on to the secondary, and where cornerback Jalen Johnson is having an excellent second year. I mean, he's allowing just 42.1% completion percentage and has four pass breakups and plus an interception per PFF. So can you talk about the strides he's kind of made from year one to year two, or do you think he's kind of been the same player as rookie and he's just getting more opportunities or what?
I think he has gotten better. He came out, for the first half of the season, he was the best rookie corner. And some national analysts thought that, not just Bear fans. but he had a shoulder injury in college, and I think it got aggravated at the end of the year last year, and he never quite came back for it. So the second half of the season was not up to par with the first half, and he just came out this year playing very strong from the beginning. And, you know, it looks a little bit too good to be true, to be honest, but he's definitely playing better than last year, and I don't know, you know, if part of it is the mentality, he knows he's the number one and he's rising to the challenge, or, you know, his off-season workouts, just getting more comfortable. The, you know, game is quote unquote slowing down for him, but
gotcha.
Whatever's happening is working.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Whatever he did in the off-season, just do it again, right? Now the other corner, and I might be butchering his name now, but is it Kendall Vildor? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's just the straightforward pronunciation.
Gotcha, like the Amazon Kindle, the door, we'll call him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't someone, obviously, that I recognized. So enlighten me, what should I expect from Vildor on Sunday?
He's been, I would say, adequate. He was kind of an aggressive player in college. He was a fifth-round pick. He went to, I think, Georgia Tech. He went to some smaller school.
Gotcha.
And he played pretty well when he had to cover for injuries last season, and the Bears – decided to roll with him. They originally signed Desmond Trufant, who's, you know, a veteran, has played well at times, and they ended up cutting him at the end of the preseason. So they feel confident in Vildor. I would say he's a little bit of a liability, but he can hold his own. He hasn't really gotten to the point where he's making plays like he did in college. He's not. I think he's probably still just trying to be an adequate number two corner, which is fair because he doesn't have a lot of playing experience. He was a late round draft pick a year ago. So,
yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's what the Bears need him to be. So can't help it if he's fitting in his role there. At safety, Eddie Jackson was certainly a big name, but from a distance, it looks like he's kind of regressed over the last few years and isn't quite the same player he was back in 2018. Would you agree with that, or am I just not paying enough attention? And then building off that, can you talk about what he brings to the Bears defense?
Yeah, that's how it looks up close as well.
Gotcha.
If there's a way to pay enough attention to make it look like he's, you know, growing and blossoming, I'd like to do that. But he has sort of fallen off a cliff. We thought for the last couple of years, maybe it was Chuck Pagano's defense just wasn't the right fit for him. But now we've gone back to a very similar defense to the one he thrived in 2018. And so far, results have been, you know, mediocre at best. He's always been, you know, more of a big playmaker than just a sort of every down consistency guy. He's never been the best tackler. And lately it's just, for the most part, been the downsides and not seeing a lot of the upsides. So,
gotcha.
So he still has that potential. You know, we may see a pick six from him, but we may see another week where the safeties give up a busted coverage and
gotcha.
The Raiders profit.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, is it, I know you brought up the scheme and whatnot, but what's been like the biggest difference in like Jackson personally that you kind of noticed from 2018 to now that's been the biggest thing that he's kind of been able to control or whatnot, or is it just a matter of scheme at this point?
I don't know. It's not just scheme. It's hard to know what's going on in a player's head. I think that he sort of fed off of his success and, you know, that motivated him. I think he's probably frustrated. He's not making the big plays. And at times I'm guessing he's trying too hard to make a big play happen. And I would guess that he's frustrated.
Gotcha. Awesome. Well, Tashawn Gibson was someone who I thought was a pretty good free agent signing for Chicago last year. but he missed last week with an injury. So again, I know the Bears have been kind of quiet about their injuries and whatnot. Trust me, working with John Gruden and whatnot, I feel your pain. So I'm just curious, is he going to be something that's, potentially playing this week? And if not, who's going to be stepping in and filling in for Gibson?
Yeah, I honestly don't know if he's going to play, but Deion Bush, he's been with the Bears for, maybe 5 years now. He was a late round draft pick who's mostly special teams, but he comes in to play safety. He's got a number of starts at safety, and he's generally adequate, which is honestly all I expect for Chazon Gibson at this point. He's another year older and slowed down a bit, I think, from last year. He's had some, our whole secondary had a lot of problems the first game against the Rams, and he was definitely part of that. So was Eddie. So I think from Bears fan perspective, Gibson, Bush, it's all hopefully good enough is the way we describe their play, and we're not expecting too much.
Gotcha. I'll be honest, hopefully good enough isn't exactly the vote of confidence I think I'd want heading into a game, but I'll take it from the opponent's perspective. So I ask everyone that comes on this podcast, how do the Bears attack tight ends, especially one the caliber as of Darren Waller? And are you confident that they'll be able to slow the Raiders superstar down?
I'm curious, because like I mentioned, Roquan Smith is one of the best coverage linebackers on the game. I think we'll definitely see a number of snaps with Roquan covering him. We'll definitely see some safety coverage, which I may be a little bit less confident in. Eddie Jackson certainly will be able to hold his own, but the Bears defense in general is very similar to the Chargers defense. They're both from the Fangio tree. So this is one of the questions that I have for you is, the Raiders had a lot of trouble in the first half and then success in the second half. I didn't watch that game closely, but do you think they made adjustments, and do you think those adjustments might be able to carry over to the next game?
Yeah. I think it was tough. I think a big part of it's kind of a lot similar to what you're talking about, Justin Fields. One of the things that I'm hoping was the difference was it just seemed like Brandon Staley kind of out-coached Gruden, which mm-hmm. For a first year head coach to out-coach a guy that's, won a Super Bowl granted 20 years ago and whatnot, it's a little bit frightening. They were talking about it on the broadcast and bringing up, how the Chargers were blitzing a linebacker to make sure that they could get, Joey Bosa on one-on-ones with Alex Leatherwood. Right. Joey Bosa is obviously an elite pass rusher, and I still think Khalil Mack's a better pass rusher than him. And I guarantee Khalil Mack's going to be lining up on the offense's right, just seeing the difference between Colton Miller and Alex Leatherwood. So I think if the Bears can do that, if they, start to blitz somebody like a Roquan Smith or, maybe one of their other linebackers that's in the game, that's, maybe not as good in coverage. I think that can give the Raiders a lot of trouble if they don't make the adjustments. As far as, what adjustments the Raiders made in the second half, I think they definitely gave Leatherwood a little bit more help. Joey Bosa was a little bit quieter, I think, in the second half. Because right now, Alex Leatherwood, he's gone against some really good pass rushers. Week two, he faced TJ Watt, who was, now the highest paid player in the NFL. So they don't come make pass rushers much better than him. And, it got worked a little bit. But, so far in every game, he hasn't had one game in pass protection where I walked away and be like, that was a good day for him. So I think if the Bears can do that, that can give him a lot of trouble. I would hope that John Gruden would, kind of learn from this last week and realize that he's got to give them a little bit more chip blocks and whatnot, which is, like I said, what they started doing in the second half. And I think if you wind back the clock a little bit to that game in London a few years ago that the Raiders ended up winning, mm-hmm. they basically put, if you watch the screen captures and whatnot on Twitter and some of the clips, there were three guys on it, Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
And I think, that year the Raiders were starting, I believe it was Brandon Parker. I can't remember exactly there. I think it was him at right tackle. And he was, similar to Alex Leatherwood, where he's just a turnstile out there in pass protection. Yeah. So I'd expect a similar game plan to that, where it's going to be a lot of guys where, you're going to see maybe even eight people in the protection scheme. And, if they're just relying on Henry Ruggs or Darren Waller to win deep, maybe putting Darren Waller on an immediate route and then Henry Ruggs on a post or a go route right behind him and whatnot, see if they can hit some shots down the field. But yeah, that's definitely a worry for me. Again, I'm kind of hoping that, it's Brandon Staley was just this defensive genius that he's kind of made out to be, people keep calling him the defensive Sean McVay. So I'm hoping that was the biggest difference, but yeah, it's definitely a matchup that I'm worried about. We were talking about it at the beginning when talking about the defensive line for the Bears. the offensive line for the Raiders and the Bears defensive line is a complete mismatch that favors the Bears right now.
So that's, I don't know if you noticed the stat, but the Bears are number one in sacks right now in the league, yeah, 15. So
yeah, I
hopefully I'm not surprised. Curl up into a ball or whatever, yeah. Joey Bosa said about him.
Yeah, it was an interesting comment, but yeah, I mean, for sure it was. Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. Like, that's going to be the biggest key to the game. And I mean, on both sides of the ball too, because I mean, Raiders don't have quite the sack numbers, but the pressure numbers are certainly up there. And those guys like Crosby and whatnot, who's leading the league and leading the edge rushers and pressures right now, has been having a hell of a year. But I want to wrap up with one more question for you before we get in onto your questions for me. And I just kind of want to talk about Matt Nagy for a second. I have my own personal opinions about Matt Nagy as a coach, but I'm curious and interested for your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I think so. I'll start by saying, if you asked anyone else from Chicago, they would say fire him yesterday. I personally like Matt Nagy, but he's starting to wear a little thin on me. Yeah. I loved him in 2018. You know, he's got a lot of good energy. He seemed sort of honest and transparent at first. I think that he aspires to be that, but it's gotten harder as things have not gone well. It's easy to be sort of, you know,
yeah,
straightforward when everything's working and you can just explain why everything's so great.
Right.
But I think he has a vision of the offense that he wants to bring to Chicago. I think part of him thinks that's why he was hired, and he probably was. But it hasn't happened. It hasn't worked. He's been stubborn about it to his detriment. But he has shown, you know, he has good qualities in terms of leading a team. The Bears have played better under him than they did under, you know, the previous coach, John Fox.
Right.
He has a lot of, you know, he has a lot of good qualities, but offensive play caller, it turns out, is not one of them, whether or not that's why he was hired. So we'll see how the year goes on. He gave up play calling duties on Sunday. Bill Lazor called the plays. It went a lot better. He did that for the end of the season last year on the same results. It went a lot better. So hopefully he just realizes it and, you know, shifts to being a head coach and not an offensive mastermind, because unfortunately he's not an offensive mastermind. But I think the Bears could have a successful season if he does give up on play calling, and that's really the only way he's going to save his job, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point. It's like, it's hard to be, there are very few coaches in the NFL that can be both a play caller and a head coach, right? Or be really good at both. And I feel like with Nagy, that's one of my biggest sticking points to me, right? It's like you just said, Bill Lazor took over last year towards the end of the year. The offense did better. Nagy, for some reason, takes the play calling back. And the offense regresses. The week that they replace him and bring in Bill Lazor again, what do you know? The offense is better. And that's where I kind of like, you know, obviously not being a Bears fan, it's not quite as frustrating, where I'm kind of sitting there as an outside perspective, like, well, then what are you doing, man? Like, you obviously have a formula that works. So are you being stubborn?
You brought up another good point, is it's just harder to be a play caller and a head coach. Yes. So you really shouldn't do it unless there's a real significant value add from you play calling. And, you know, with Nagy, it's a value minus with him play calling. So, you know, from the outside looking in, it's a no-brainer. Somebody else needs to be calling the plays.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even like his like mentor, right, whatnot, Andy Reid, you know, he gave up play calling a couple of years ago to Bieniemy or whatnot. So
he gave it up to Nagy the year before he got hired. So,
yeah. So, well, awesome, man. What, Patty, what questions do you have for me?
Yeah, well, let's start with the flip of that. Is how is the Gruden experience going from the Raiders fan perspective?
I tell you what, if you would have asked me, well, I'll precaution this. I'm still a little pissed off about yesterday, what I was talking about earlier. So my opinion might be a little bit swayed by a recency bias. But if you had asked me in August about Gruden, I sat on here, and I think I even said it on this podcast, like, if Gruden didn't have his name as John Gruden and whatnot in the $10 million contract, or the 10-year, $100 million contract, mm-hmm. like, we would have been talking all offseason about him being on the hot seat, right? Yeah. I don't know how many coaches in the NFL get 3 years to try and rebuild and make a playoff team, right? Like, I mean, we're talking about Matt Nagy being on the hot seat, and he's been in the playoffs 2 out of 3 years as a head coach, right?
Right.
I mean, last year, you know, say what you want about the extra playoff spot and whatnot, but I mean, he still made it, and Raiders didn't. I am more optimistic about John Gruden this year, though. I think that he's made a lot of changes, you know, early on in the season, in the first three games, I should say, that I think he needed to make and that he's really done. But then again, there was days like yesterday or days like Monday night where, you know, you're sitting there and it's like now he's stuck back in his ways and he's not making the adjustments that he's need to be making and whatnot. I do like John Gruden as a coach. My problem with John Gruden is I feel like his ego is, you know, as big as this room and whatnot.
Yeah.
And his, I feel like part of him, he wanted to come back because he kind of had that stigma about his Super Bowl championship of, you know, doing it with Tony Dungy's team, right? You know, because they had taken over the playoff right. Series for the Bucks and whatnot. And that's kind of been the one black mark on his resume going after being a coach. So I think part of him kind of wanted to be able to shut everybody up and, you know, do it with his own guys and bring in his own players. And I think the result that we're seeing is John Gruden, the general manager, or John Gruden, the player personnel person, is getting in the way of John Gruden, the head coach. Like the rumor that floats around, and I mean, this never been proven, don't know if it ever will be, is that John Gruden kind of takes control of the first or the early round picks and then kind of gives it up to Mike Mayock for the later rounds. And if you look at the Raiders draft history in the last, you know, 4 years, their first round picks have been terrible. Cleveland Farrell, Jonathan Abram, Damon Arnett, Henry Ruggs until the last three games of the year, you know, was looking like terrible as a rookie and whatnot. And I mean, Josh Jacobs, for as great as he is, you know, he's banged up all the time and plays the least valuable position in the NFL.
Right.
But then you look at guys like Max Crosby, who was a fourth round pick. Yeah. Hunter Renfrow was a fifth round pick. And Nate Hobbs, who's starting for them at slot corner this year and has been awesome for him, also a fifth round pick. So that's where I'm kind of coming from of like, if John Gruden could just be less of a control freak and just give the reins over to Mike Mayock, I think this not only would they have a great roster or a better roster, but they'd also have a coach that, you know, for as bad as the roster's been, Ray's been putting up points. And that's John Gruden's stuff. And I mean, so that's where I'm kind of coming from of like, dude, if you just let somebody else get your personnel, you've done that before and you won a Super Bowl. Like, what are we trying to do here, man? Like, you know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic. I feel like Gruden personality wise, I think is a really easy guy to root for, right? That's why he's in the Monday Night Football booth and he's got really charismatic. So I definitely root for him from that perspective, but I really just wish he would just kind of, you know, give up a little bit of control. Like we were talking about with Matt Nagy, you know, Matt Nagy is like, he just needs
to in a similar situation where, you know, I mean, you probably have to have a pretty big ego to be a head coach, but
yeah, for sure.
Sometimes it helps to allocate responsibility a little bit and, you know, trust the people who work with you to do their jobs.
Definitely. For sure.
So talking about Raiders personnel, I have to ask what your impression of this sort of from the outside perspective, surprising O-line. I don't know how to just sort of explosion and rebuild out of without a lot of I don't know, instigation or
Pat,
obvious reason from the outside.
I got to be honest, this conversation was going great for the first 45 minutes. Now you're just pushing my buttons over here because I wrote an article earlier today and I listed the offensive line and John Gruden as losers from the game last night or Monday night. The changes on the offensive line I thought was a little bit blown up in the kind of the mainstream media a little bit. You know, Trent Brown, yeah, they got rid of Trent Brown. Trent Brown had missed as many games as he played as a Raider. Like he just was never available. You know, he's injured. And I mean, he's injured now, right now. The Patriots, I think he played seven snaps so far at this point last year for the Raiders. I think he had played three, something like that. So he just wasn't available, was on a huge contract. Rumor was he showed up at 400 pounds in the offseason and whatnot. So that one was one where I was like, okay, I get this. They got to move on. Like he's making way too much money and, you know, obviously not putting the work in. Gabe Jackson was kind of the similar lines where, you know, I was kind of sitting there like, I like Gabe. He was a guy that's been drafted here, a guy that's been here a while, and was actually Khalil Mack's draft class, which, you know, is probably one of the best draft classes in Raiders history. You know, that included Derek Carr as well. Got three guys that were, you know, really good players and whatnot. But Gabe had regressed a lot. Gabe had kind of been more of an average to okay offensive guard, but he's making $10 million a year. So again, just not living up to his contract. So I got that one. And, you know, again, it was something that I even thought might have even happened the year before. They held on to him for an extra year and, you know, ended up letting him go. So that one made sense to me. And then they actually cut Richie Incognito and then brought him back like a few days later. But then again, Richie Incognito is now injured again and on injured reserve, which happened last year too. And I mean, he's 37 turning 38. So that's not exactly a good sign either. The one I could not get behind and I'm still very mad about is letting Rodney Hudson go. Rodney Hudson for years, even, you know, now I don't think it would be the case with Darren Waller just because he's such a stud, but for about 5 years, Rodney Hudson was the Raiders' best offensive player. Like he was the center, he was their center, you know, making all the calls and doing a lot of the thinking of protection wise for Derek Carr. And I mean, the guy like never gave up a sack. He gave up like one sack as a Raider in like 5 years. It was unbelievable. Like how efficient that guy was in pass protection. And you know, he was good against the run, but he was getting up there in age and had a bigger contract, but they ended up taking on more of a cap hit this year to let him go because they tried to ask him to take a pay cut. And he basically said, no, get rid of me. And they traded him. But right now, the biggest, one of the, probably the biggest weak spot on their offensive line has been the center position because they have a guy in there that before the season had literally started one game at center and was transitioning from a college offensive tackle to come play center. And I mean, it wasn't as bad this week, but the week before he couldn't even get the snaps back there. He had a bad snap that whatnot, which obviously is an important part of playing center. So that was the one where I have been really frustrated with and have never agreed with, especially because the Raiders are struggling with communication on their offensive line and pass protection. That's been one of their biggest issues when teams get into a lot of those, you know, those double A gap or double mug looks where basically all the defense is trying to do is test the offensive line's communication. They usually end up giving up the sack or giving up a pressure and whatnot. And Derek Carr's got to scramble around. So that's the one where I've never really been a big fan of, never really understood. And I mean, as we're seeing it go on and throughout the year, you know, is really, really hurting them. And I think one that if you kind of look back on it, obviously they'll never admit it, but one move that I'm sure Mike Mayock and John Gruden probably want back from this offseason.
Yeah, that was also the most shocking from the outside to validate that. Yeah. I don't know why. I think center is one of the most undervalued positions in the NFL because it has such a huge effect on your whole offensive line play if someone knows what they're doing or if they don't. And I don't know. It's not paid well. It's not really valued well. But we have a UDFA center. He's a smart guy, but we could also use another. We could use Rodney Hudson to be awesome. I thought we should have traded for him.
Awesome.
I will say though, in Trent Brown's defense, every time I play Madden, I go to you can edit your characters, and I always bump my offensive line weight to 400. So I think that's a plus. You gotta bump those guys up.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a little bit of a troll question, but how much are you guys enjoying Josh Jacobs, Damon Arnett, and Bryan Edwards?
Bryan Edwards has been pretty good this year. Bryan Edwards, like he's ironically, like there was a stat that was floating around last week. He has like something like 111 yards of receiving yards in regulation and then like 105 in overtime. which is already an NFL record for the single season. So, I mean, the guy's been clutch. Bryan Edwards has been solid. He's been good. Obviously not what Khalil Mack is. Like we were just talking about with Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs has been a great running back when he's been healthy and been on the field, but that hasn't been very often. Part of it's probably because he played behind a bad offensive line and getting beat up. But, I mean, he started the year off injured. Even in the Baltimore game, he was a little gimpy heading into that game. Ended up having to miss 2 weeks and then was a game time decision on Monday night. And, you know, running backs, like all the analytics, all PFF has said, you know, it's very much dependent on the offensive line versus the actual individual. And that's kind of been, you know, one of the frustrating things from the get-go that I've tried to hammer home with Raider fans is you don't give up a guy that plays the second most important position on the field for a guy that plays the least.
Right.
But yeah. And then, I mean, Damon Arnett, like, I don't even know what to say about him. He started last year because he had to. And I mean, they brought in Casey Hayward. They were looking at drafting a corner. It didn't end up working out. They brought in Casey Hayward after the draft, who Casey Hayward's been their best corner on the team this year. And Damon Arnett is getting just no playing time. And when he is out there, he's getting roasted. He got beat by Chase Claypool in week two on a 50-yard bomb. And then after the bomb, Chase Claypool's on the ground. He is pouting and doesn't touch him down and gives up 10 more yards. And then, you know, yesterday or Monday night, He got beat terribly by Mike Williams off the line of scrimmage. Luckily, Justin Herbert overthrew Mike Williams. And then he ended up getting hurt. And the guy that came in was in the same draft class as Damon Arnett last year. And that was a fourth round pick in Amik Robertson. And Amik Robertson outplayed him, honestly. I mean, Damon Arnett right now is probably like the fifth cornerback on the Raiders roster, if I'm being real. And they have somebody that's coming off injured reserve soon. And I would not be surprised if we get one of those little ESPN or Twitter notifications that say the Raiders have cut Damon Arnett, because I mean, it's been that bad. He's been awful. I think in the offseason, there were some questions about his work ethic coming around, rumors swirling around about that, which I mean, if you're going to be bad, at least work hard.
Right.
You know,
well, so. Those things sometimes go together though.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure.
So I was also wondering, you know, Bears fans travel well, how much of your home field advantage do you think the Raiders lost moving to Las Vegas? Do you still have a good home team turnout?
I think so. I think you think about the Raiders, they've always kind of been nomads, right? Started in San Francisco technically, but started in Oakland, then moved to LA for about 10 years, grew a big fan base down there too. And then came back to Oakland. And I mean, the whole time, you know, not a whole lot of people left. I grew up in the Bay Area. I think people that were born in like the 80s and whatnot, when the Raiders were in LA, you know, obviously became Niner fans because that was the hometown team and the team didn't come back till 95. But for the most part, like people who were in Oakland that were Raider fans, I think stuck with the team. And then when they moved back from LA back up to the Bay in Oakland, I think a lot of LA Raider fans stuck with the team too. And I think you're seeing the same thing. Obviously there are some bitter Raider fans who, you know, it was their hometown team, not their hometown team anymore and whatnot, not quite as much a fan, but I mean, Ravens are a fan base that are going to travel well. And the Raiders, that Monday night opener was a huge Raider fan base. And I think this year, especially with it being the first year that they're having to have fans in the new stadium, I think mm-hmm. we're definitely going to see, you know, still a lot of black jerseys and whatnot, a lot of yelling for the Raiders and whatnot. Now, as things progress in a few years from now, especially if the Raiders aren't winning, I mean, yeah. I'll ask you this. If you're a Bears fan, you're looking at going to, or an opposing fan from anywhere, and you're looking at going to the game and you see a potential Vegas trip for a weekend and whatnot. Yeah, I imagine that's probably the away game you're going to go to.
It's going to draw them. Yeah. You know, I was going to say Bears fans will show up to Vegas for the game, but it's possible we'll lose all our money and have to sell our tickets before the game actually happens. So
yeah,
you have that. Yeah.
That is true. Maybe that's the added advantage. Maybe it'll get some, a little bit of a resale market and whatnot. Have people outside the casinos looking for tickets for people that have lost everything they own. Right.
And I just wanted to end with Derek Carr from the outside looking in, save one half and Monday night, we don't need to talk about. It looks like he's playing his best football of his career. Do you think this is part of just ups and downs, or do you think there's been a real change this season?
There's definitely been a real change. Derek Carr and John Gruden, they keep trying to sell it as, oh, he's just been the same guy. I mean, the numbers don't lie. The film doesn't lie. Like, he's being way more aggressive. He's using his feet a lot more this year too. Mm-hmm. And that's probably partially because he has to. You know, in the last few years, the Raiders had spent more money than anybody on the offensive line. So, I mean, if you have that mindset and whatnot, I'm just going to sit in this pocket and whatnot and right. you know, let these high paid guys pay for me. Now that they don't, and now that they're one of the worst pass blocking offensive lines, you know, he has to move his feet and, you know, make plays happen on his own this year. And I think one of the biggest stigmas around Derek Carr has always been like, oh, he needs the situation to be perfect, right? He needs this great offensive line. He needs all these dynamic weapons on the outside to play well. But I mean, like I said at the beginning, like I keep harping on, the Raiders offensive line has been terrible this year. Their weapons heading into the year were a bunch of, outside of Darren Waller, of course, were a bunch of no names. You know, Henry Ruggs wasn't good as a rookie. Brian Edwards was a third round pick. You know, and those were their top two receivers coming into the year. And I think Derek Carr is absolutely playing his best ball this year. He's been way more aggressive than he has been in the past. You know, in the years past, he's even had quote sayings like, if I have two receivers open, but one's a guaranteed completion short, I'm going to take the one that's guaranteed short. Like, and there's one play that kind of stuck out to me that's really been the difference between Derek Carr in the years past against the Steelers that ended up clinching them the game. You might have saw it floating around on Twitter or on SportsCenter or something, but you know, the Steelers were running like a bracketed coverage on Darren Waller, where Minkah Fitzpatrick was kind of cheating on his side, and mm-hmm. Derek Carr had Henry Ruggs on the post and whatnot. And he also had Hunter Renfrow on a slant on the inside that was both of them were wide open. Hunter Renfrow would have been open for the first down. And Derek Carr, you know, kind of looked Minka Fitzpatrick off, held him with his eyes. And then he actually threw it before Henry Ruggs was even actually open and just chucked it deep and then connected with him for a 50-yard bomb to, like I said, seal the game. That we did not see that from Derek Carr. We haven't seen that from Derek Carr since 2016 and probably even before that, probably more like 2015. Like, that guy was not on film last year. And I think that's definitely, like, you hit the nail right on the head. Like, he's playing his best football right now. Obviously, you know, the first half last night, you know, it's a little bit counterproductive to that, saying that. But I mean, yeah, he's absolutely playing to me at an MVP level, playing better than I've ever seen him. And I've obviously followed him for all of his career. So yeah, he's definitely playing out of his mind right now.
Well, he looks good from the outside too. So let's hope he has another one more bad game. And then, you know, you can have a great season after that.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Patty, one more time. Tell you what, let's let people know where they can follow you. We're all football fans around here. Always good to know about stuff going on with the Bears. So where can the people find you out on Twitter?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Opinion Bear. I talk about the Bears. I talk about actual Bears. Most of the things I tweet are half jokes. So you're welcome to follow. Don't take it too seriously.
Sounds good. Well, you guys know where to follow me. Of course, follow Silver and Black Pride. Follow me at mholder95. Other than that, until next week, guys.